Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're about to dive into something really unique, a fascinating, sometimes kind of bewildering look at internet subcultures, their evolution. We've got this collection of, well, informal online chats and notes, pulled from two sources named goontalk.txt and web2.0.txt.
Yeah, think of it like we're trying to decode this pretty underground, maybe even cynical take on the internet's history and soul. Our goal today is really to unpack the core ideas, the definitions, the theories in these really candid sources that give this raw, kind of unfiltered look at how some people, some insiders, maybe see the internet. Past, present, future. We're going to talk about cultural shifts and this entity they keep calling the goon.
Okay, yeah, let's break this down. When you first got these sources, what was your gut reaction? Just how raw are we talking?
Oh, it's definitely not your standard history book. You can tell it's intensely personal. These observations, they've got a real edge to them. So what you're going to hear is, yeah, a highly specific and frankly, a very strongly held viewpoint on internet culture. And just to be super clear, our aim here is simply to present what's in these texts, to help you understand the language, the ideas they're using. We're not endorsing any specific viewpoint. It's about, you know, giving you a comprehensive look into these, well, unique perspectives. Okay, so to start, the sources lay out this really specific timeline of internet eras. It's probably not one you've seen before. They start with Web 1.0, that's 1989 to 1996, simple enough. Then Web 2.0, which they peg as 1996 to 2004. And interestingly, they mention End of Evangelion from 97.
Oh, right. Just 1 year into their Web 2.0.
Exactly. They see it as a key cultural marker right at the start of that era. It suggests they see that shows artistic shifts as really tied into how the internet itself is changing.
Huh. Interesting connection.
Then they define Web 2.5. That runs 2004 to 2009. And smack in the middle, 2007 is the first Evangelion rebuild movie.
So Evangelion keeps popping up as like a yardstick for them.
It really does seem that way. Next up is Web 2.75 from 2009 to 2016, and they point out that 2009, which is kind of the midpoint between 2.5 and 2.75, is often seen by internet users as this big turning point year.
Okay.
And finally, Web 3.0, that's 2016 up to, well, now, the current era.
So it's really important for you listening to get that these are their categories. They're specific, maybe even unconventional. You won't find these in like a standard textbook on internet history. It's their framework for the cultural argument they're building.
Precisely. It's their lens.
Okay, so let's dig into the vibe of those earlier eras. Web 2.0 and especially Web 2.5. What did they feel like, according to these sources? They talk about playfulness, right? And this phrase, meridian of anti-fappery.
Yeah, huh. It's a memorable one. It kind of suggests this period of maybe innocence, or at least a focus away from just shallow or sexualized stuff.
Right. And there's this real longing in the text, isn't there? Like a dream they mention.
There is. A dream for the, quote, remotely good parts of the culture of Web 2.5 to become a dominant force in Western culture. They really value its irreverent, niche expressionist humor.
And the ideal they paint is, what was it? Dumb kids doing edgy and surreal but harmless shit and not caring about the optics.
Exactly. That not caring about the optics part seems key. And they give examples, which is helpful. For Web 2.5 culture, they list anime like Hetalia and Naruto.
Okay, Naruto makes sense. Huge back then. Hetalia too. Very distinct humor.
Right. Live action web stuff. They mentioned Mega 64, those guys doing pranks in public.
Oh, yeah. I remember them.
Games. Yummy Nikki, that really surreal indie horror game. Corpse Party. And then the big online social games. Toontown, Fusion Fall, Club Penguin, Wizard 101.
Wow. Okay. That's a real nostalgia trip for a certain age group.
Definitely. And for animation, Homestar Runner, Pico School, Madness Combat, you know, the classic Flash era stuff from Newgrounds.
Staples.
Plus early YouTube channels like Yogscast, Rooster Teeth.
That's a really vivid snapshot, isn't it? Like digging up a digital time capsule. It makes you think. How does that spirit they describe, that kind of spontaneous, maybe naive creation, how does it stack up against today, where everything online feels so curated, so watched for optics?
That's, I think, the absolute core of their argument, that contrast. They see Web 2.5 as this period of like unselfconscious fun, and they see today as something, well, much more cynical, much more performative, this feeling of loss. It runs through everything they write.
And that leads into scene culture.
Right. Which they see as this really critical thing that ultimately kind of destroyed itself, or at least the idea of scenes as they knew them.
How so? They seem a bit conflicted on it.
They do. At first, they describe it as built on hyper-sincerity, but also hyper-collectiveness, like really intense belonging. But then later, they call it deeply insincere because of its hyper-collectivism. So there's this tension. Was it genuine or was it just groupthink?
Right, like the pressure to conform kind of crushed the sincerity.
Maybe that's the idea. They even call it the death knell of the Sekhmet quadrinity, which sounds intense. It's their term for what they see as like four linked subcultures that seen culture sort of absorbed and killed off.
Wow. And they place this historically.
Yeah, they say, in the 2000s, we were in the scene era. We have now entered a post-scene, post-modern digital world.
So a real breakpoint.
Seems so. They also mention, almost like an aside, the whole goth emo scene pipeline thing that sociologists find interesting, though they know there aren't really solid studies on it because it's kind of niche and recent. Mm-hmm. But you can tell they find those crowds anthropologically interesting in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But then they make some pretty pointed, maybe even controversial observations, specifically about the role of women in fandom and internet culture.
Okay, tread carefully here. Yeah. What do the sources say?
The sources claim that, quote, women think entirely in terms of circles and scenes. They also say women commodify, reify, and entrap tribalism, and that women are the primary driving force behind fandom and fandoms as we know them.
Wow. Okay. So again, just to stress for everyone listening,
right,
these are views presented in the source material. Very specific, very pointed views. It definitely tells you something about the mindset behind these texts, the kinds of frustrations maybe being expressed about online group dynamics.
Absolutely. It's a key part of understanding their whole worldview.
And this seems like a good pivot to that other central term they use constantly, the goon.
Yes, the goon. It's definitely a loaded term in these texts. They offer one specific kind of informal definition, someone who likes prolonged sexual stimulation without orgasm, but also just means wanker, jerk off, or slacker.
Okay, so kind of a general pejorative.
Initially, yeah. But they use it much more broadly. They link it specifically to the something awful kind of goon, referring to the users of that infamous forum.
Ah, okay. That gives it a specific cultural anchor.
It does. And they have this image of the eternal goon being at the center of a triangle made up of a hipster, a Jew, and an edgelord.
Whoa. Okay, let's unpack that carefully. Again, this is their characterization from the source.
Exactly. We have to be really clear. This is the specific and potentially offensive imagery they use. It seems to paint a picture of someone they see as embodying what? Performative coolness? Cynicism? Maybe manipulative intent? Provocation for its own sake?
Like the total opposite of that Web 2.5 playfulness they like.
Precisely. That seems to be the core contrast. And again, we're just reporting on the language they use in these texts. They describe this goon mentality as a vehicle for hypermodernity, promoting, quote, enthusiasm, but not too much.
Not too much enthusiasm. That sounds like being afraid to be earnest.
Yeah, or maybe seeing earnestness as cringe or uncool. Also, a spread it wide, not deep approach. Superficial engagement. And just a general cynical and anti-effort culture. Like, it's cooler not to try too hard. They also blame goons for breaking authenticity online, disintegrating actual communication, which leads to that line you mentioned.
Memes are cancer. Yeah. Which is wild because memes are like the lingua franca of the internet now for so many people.
It really highlights their disillusionment, doesn't it? They see memes in this context as part of the problem, as hindering real connection or creativity.
Right.
And they also accuse goons of hostile takeovers of online movements, basically jumping onto something cool and then ruining it, blunting the initial enthusiasm.
Leading to
what they call forced obsolescence of media, making things feel old or irrelevant before their time.
Okay, so it's pretty clear reading these texts that goons are positioned as the villains of this story.
Absolutely. The archenemy. They talk about a strong anti-goon feeling, even an anti-goon manifesto. It's central to their whole narrative.
So how does this goon instinct, as they call it, and these wider shifts, how do they see it impacting pop culture, fandoms, that kind of thing?
Well, they argue that the kind of obnoxious Tumblr fandomness, as they put it, isn't gone. It's just spread out now.
Because there's no single big site like Tumblr anymore.
That's their take. It's diversified and splintered onto Twitter, YouTube, wherever. But the underlying dynamics, they argue, are still there.
And this forced obsolescence idea applies to media, too.
Yeah, they describe this weird cycle where something gets popular, then it gets torn down or undermined by cynicism.
And then later someone discovers it and calls it an underrated gem.
Exactly. That whole cycle, devalue, then rediscover, which they see as, again, driven by this anti-enthusiasm goon thing.
And they use Evangelion again here, right, as the prime example.
They do. It's their go-to case study. They trace its journey from being this huge cultural touchstone
Yeah, massively influential.
to then being seen as pretentious by some, then kind of faux obscure, like people pretending it's more niche than it is, and finally ending up as, quote, mopecore for Zoomers post Netflix.
Mocore, wow. It's dismissive. So Jess, it's just like performative sadness.
Pretty much. Superficial angst, maybe? And they see that whole trajectory as a microcosm of any kind of new sincerity, any genuine artistic expression being eaten, spat out, and later shat out by the goon instinct against too much enthusiasm.
Man, it's a really bleak picture they paint.
It is. They literally write, genuine passion is dying. Art is dying. The internet is dead. Communication lays in the smoke signals long since dissipated.
Yikes. Okay. So the despair is palpable.
Very.
And it's not just big cultural trends. They zoom in on specific things, too, like video games.
Yeah, JRPGs specifically. Things like the relationship level up, mechanics you see in games like Persona, the social links.
Oh, right, where you spend time with characters to strengthen bonds and get gameplay benefits. People love those systems.
Well, these sources don't. They call it the gamification of relationships. They think it's wrong and stupid and anti-ludonarrative.
Anti-ludonarrative, meaning?
Meaning it clashes with the game's story or themes, reducing something complex like a relationship to just like a meter you fill up.
Making it transactional. Binary.
Exactly. They feel it makes the significance strictly binary. You either maxed the link or you didn't. And that undermines any real emotional depth the story might be aiming for.
Interesting critique. Okay, so shifting gears slightly, what about their views on younger internet users, on Zoomers or Gen Z?
Yeah, their perspective here is, well, it's pretty blunt.
Not so.
They find cultivating humor with Zoomers almost impossible. They claim if something makes them uncomfortable or bores them, they basically have an autistic shutdown.
Okay, that phrasing itself is problematic, obviously, but it shows the sheer level of frustration in the source, right? Mm-hmm. A perceived lack of engagement.
I think that's the takeaway, yeah. The intensity of their negative perception. They feel Zoomers lack that Web 2.0 playfulness. Instead, they say Zoomers just want their meme circle jerks, and they specifically mention Homestuck.
Huh. And they connect Gen Z back to scene culture.
They do. They state Gen Z really is just scene, but with more tattoos and dursites.
Dursites. What's that?
That's a reference to Durs, the antagonistic kingdom in the webcomic Homestuck. So they're associating Gen Z with negativity or like the bad guys from that specific piece of internet culture.
Wow. Okay. So it all ties back for them.
It really does. It connects back to their whole argument about losing that irreverent niche expressionist humor they loved in Web 2.5 and the rise of what they see as a fake edgy culture that gets snuffed out quickly. It's this consistent story of decline from their point of view.
So after wading through all this, this very specific, very opinionated view, what's the big picture? What does it all kind of boil down to?
Well, we've definitely explored a unique and, yeah, often polemical way of looking at internet history and culture. You see this constant tension they highlight. Sincerity versus irony, the group versus the individual, genuine passion versus cynical detachment. And overall, there's this profound sense from their perspective of loss, a decline in real enthusiasm, real connection online.
Yeah. And exploring it really makes you think, doesn't it? About how the labels we use, the way we periodize things, how that shapes how we understand these online worlds, the narratives we build about the internet's past, present, and maybe its future.
Exactly.
So maybe a final thought to leave you with, something from the sources themselves. They say time reveals all things. If that's true, what will people studying us now, maybe future anthropologists, what will they make of today's internet culture? And what will they make of our attempts, like this one right here, to even define it? Especially through such a specific, passionate, and kind of unusual lens as the one we've looked at today.